So we took it a step further and then turned it into an unscripted show that was essentially a small business makeover show. So we would sh still share the stories of the small businesses, but we would come in and help them with those things. But it wasn't like a typical reality show. Like, we ignored all of the tropes of like creating faux drama and things like that. Like, as entrepreneurs know, like, you don't have to create drama. Like, just running the business is the antagonist. So yeah, and it ran for 6 seasons. It was on Hulu. As you mentioned, it was nominated for a few Emmys. And it was essentially that each season we would ask people to nominate their favorite small town, and then we would come in and invest $500,000 in revitalizing the winning town's main street. And we would do that through its small businesses. So it had this really incredible community impact, and it was changing these towns and everything from the nomination process to the actual businesses we worked with on the show in real life. It was just really magical to see how we could use something that could have been marketing dollars and actually change lives.
Hello, my name is Emily Jansen, and this is the Leadership is Female podcast. We interview women in the sports and entertainment businesses to teach you the tips and the mindset that will get you to the top faster. Marian Wright Edelman said, "You can't be what you can't see." Let's bring visibility to women who are crushing it in their roles. Join us week after week, season after season, as we reach back to extend a hand to pull you forward. We will lead you forward because leadership is female. Welcome to the Leadership is Female podcast, Amanda Brinkman. We're so excited to have you. I want you to introduce
yourself.
Great to
be here. Thank you for
to
having
us.
me.
Yeah, tell us who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so my name is Amanda Brinkman, and I am an entrepreneur. I'm a producer in the film space, and I am a speaker. I'm a mother. I'm a new volleyball coach of our daughter's team, which is very exciting. I'm kind of living this portfolio career. So a huge part of this season of my life was all about not being defined by just one thing, but having capacity to be many things at the same time. And it's taken a while to kind of carve out this lifestyle, but I'm here now and very much enjoying it.
Well, you're crushing it. And we met a few months ago in Minnesota at a speaking event, and you just blew me away from the beginning. I have this saying that I live by, be so good they won't forget you. And I want to tell you that you exemplify that quote. You are unforgettable with
That
your.
is like the nicest thing you could say to a person. Thank you for blessing me with that. That's amazing. Thank you for saying that.
You are so welcome, and it is so well deserved, and all the hard work you've put in, you earned it.
Well,
So
that means a lot coming from you, who has achieved unbelievable things as well. So thank you.
you're so sweet. Well, I want this love fest to continue for the entire show.
We'll start a mutual admiration society.
Yes, here we go. Yes, women supporting women. Love it. Well, let's dig in a little bit more. You gave us like these real, nice words and the highlights of who you are and what you do. But you are a producer, filmmaker, branding expert, sought after public speaker, sharing your message of do well by doing good. And that's your philosophy. And that's really where, all the things that you said in your portfolio, they all sort of blossomed from this idea, including working in TV, having a reality show, so many things. So I don't know where you want to start, but I definitely want to talk about do well by doing good, what that message is, how you share that message, and how that grew into all the things.
Well, you know what? Someone just asked me this the other day, and so I'll share this story. This, where did that originally come from? And I didn't coin the phrase. I think there's been many people in history who have said it, but it really resonated for me. And the first time I didn't call it this at the time, but the first time this idea occurred to me was actually in high school, when you're having the classic discussion with one of your teachers about, like, what are you gonna go, what are you gonna do after graduation? Are you gonna go on to college? What are you gonna study? And I remember sharing with him that I felt very compelled to do something that was good in the world. I was raised in a family that gave back a lot. And I was like, I want to go do something that, you know, is what we would have labeled as good. But I was so attracted to film and broadcast and design and creativity and marketing. But I felt like that seemed too secular or something. I don't know. I just didn't feel like that read as immediately as like, you know, doing good in the world. And so I shared that with my teacher. I just said, I want to do good in the world, but I'm so attracted to, you know, the business space and film and TV and marketing. And he said, well, but Amanda, if people who want to do good in the world don't go into business, how will the business world ever get better? And for me, that was like what I think people call a paradigm shift, or, you know, just, it was an aha moment for sure, where I was like, that's true. And it gave me some sort of permission to go into something I was very interested in, but feel like maybe that was a challenge. Like, how do I kind of bring goodness into that space? And so I kind of took that up as my mantra and, you know, went into marketing advertising. I started my career on the ad agency side. Had really cool experiences. One of my first campaigns I got to work on was the BMW Films, which is still 20 plus years later lauded as kind of the best example of branded entertainment. And I didn't even realize what an anomaly it was in the space because I was so new in my career. So I kind of grew up just expecting that brands were capable of really beautiful content and entertainment. So that was a blessing. And then I moved over to the corporate side and held various kind of chief, you know, or marketing roles on my path to being a chief marketing officer. So I was at United Health Group and then Allianz, General Mills. And then I ended up at a company called Deluxe, where I finally had the opportunity to truly demonstrate this theory that companies can do well by doing good. In all of my different roles, whether it was in healthcare or financial services or in CPG, I felt like I was, you know, influencing those around me with this goodness message, or I was affecting the campaigns that were under my purview that way. But it wasn't until this last role that I had, that I truly could bring it all together and create this beautiful case study about how companies can do well by doing good, through a program that we ran called the Small Business Revolution. So.
Well, speaking of the small business revolution, you then took that concept and created, produced, and hosted a reality TV show that was also Emmy nominated. So, okay, you did proof of concept inside this agency and then launched into this TV show. Tell us about that. And then also I want to talk a little bit more TV, like what's it like day-to-day hosting, all the good
things. It was a lot of fun. So when I joined Deluxe, I was their chief brand officer and we were about to celebrate our 100th anniversary. Now you're too young to know what a checkbook is, but Deluxe invented the checkbook. And so it had been around since 1915. And so my challenge as a brand marketer was how do you not only raise the awareness of the company, but change the perceptions, because we had started to evolve well past checks. We had started to do all of these services for small businesses. So we could do everything from build your website, create your logo, SEO. We could do all these things for small businesses. And so as a marketer, whenever I start at a new company, I just love to spend time with the customers. You know, how else can you figure out how to communicate and, change hearts and minds and get them to either buy things or pay attention to your company if you don't understand what it's like to be them. And so I was out spending time with all these small businesses and I was like, just so blown away by their stories. You know, you're at the restaurant and you see the family working in the back and you're like, oh my gosh, they're learning incredible work ethic. You go to a retail store and you hear about how she left her corporate security job and then moved into, helping people, live their dreams through wedding dresses. Or you just hear these incredible stories of small businesses and you want to support them. And so that was the idea, is could we, instead of, just create an ad campaign that said we used to do checks, now we do websites for small businesses, could we instead of competing over here, could we stand alone over here and be seen as the champions of small businesses? Could we create a movement to draw attention to the importance of supporting small businesses? And so that's when the concept of the small business revolution was born. And in our 100th year, we went across the country and shared the stories of 100 small businesses through these beautiful films and very documentary style. And so we ended up, from a marketing case study, we ended up reaching 12 times more people than we would have reached if we would have done an ad campaign. And so it showed that there is real power in doing something that is, you know, good for your customers. And instead of talking at them, we were standing alongside them. We were using our platform and our dollars to amplify their stories rather than our marketing message. And so it started to gain attention for sure in the marketing world. And then was helping us kind of gain the share of voice with small businesses. So we're like, well, let's keep going. But we really wanted to do even more than just share the stories. We wanted to help these businesses. Like, the things they were struggling with are the things we do as a business. You know, they were struggling with their marketing and their finances. And so we took it a step further and then turned it into an unscripted show that was essentially a small business makeover show. So we would still share the stories of the small businesses, but we would come in and help them with those things. But it wasn't like a typical reality show. Like, we ignored all of the tropes of like creating faux drama and things like that. Like, as entrepreneurs know, like, you don't have to create drama. Like, just running the business is the antagonist. So, and it ran for 6 seasons. It was on Hulu. As you mentioned, it was nominated for a few Emmys. And it was essentially that each season we would ask people to nominate their favorite small town. And then we would come in and invest $500,000 in revitalizing the winning town's main street. And we would do that through its small businesses. So it had this really incredible community impact, and it was changing these towns and everything from the nomination process to the actual businesses we worked with on the show in real life. It was just really magical to see how we could use something that could have been marketing dollars and actually change life. So again, for me, it felt like it was coming full circle, that we were truly demonstrating, you know, how companies could do well by doing good. Doing well for Deluxe is raising our awareness with small businesses, but we did good for all these people on our way to doing that. So,
wow, what an incredible story. And I also was thinking about like how the beginning of your advertising career and working on those BMW campaigns or like long form stories sort of pulled through all these years later,
and
became so relevant, probably even more relevant today when we have so much more access to consuming this content. And that's something that, you know, you've demonstrated is the impact that publishers can make through content strategy. And what is your advice for our listeners or, you know, brands or companies when they're thinking about their content strategy? Like, where do you start in order to tie these two concepts together? Like, a content strategy that can move the needle for your business, but also do well by doing good.
Yeah, I love this question. So I literally just got back from the Sundance Film Festival, where we had this subgroup focused on brand storytelling, and we shared films with each other and had great conversations. It was wonderful to be in community with other filmmakers and brands who are trying to use their content to stand for something and to do something good. When I left Deluxe, I started my own film company called Sunshine Studios. And this is exactly what we're focused on, is, you know, content that, it does good for business, it moves the business, but by the very nature of what it is, it engages audiences. And then it does some sort of good in the world. It's the third principle that's really important to us. Not all content that's branded has to do that, but that's something that's core to the work my team and I will be doing and are doing. But the thing I always advise brands on is, you know, we have to stop and think about, you know, there's a lot of talk about brand purpose in the world, which I love. I love that we're using the word brand purpose. But if we don't actually take brand action, brand purpose just kind of becomes this really fancy term for a mission statement. And it's just something that's on a wall. And so it's like, what can your company uniquely do that's going to matter in the lives of your customers? There's a lot of stuff that reads instantly as good. But as I get older, as we see the world continue to evolve, the more broadly I think about what good is. Like, I think joy is good. Like bringing people joy. Like remember fun? Like that was a good that we enjoyed that. So let's bring that back. Like I think it's about like what can your brand do to make the lives of your customers better beyond just selling them things? And is there something that really matters to your core group of consumers that you could be an help be an advocate alongside them for? Could you offer them something that is educational that can help improve their lives? Like, what can you, to stop and really think about identifying that brand purpose, and then what could your brand action be? And then figure out really beautiful storytelling behind that to either reach them with that message, to showcase and demonstrate what a difference it makes when you invest in something like that as a brand. The storytelling can take so many different forms. It could be an unscripted show. A lot of what we're working on right now is longer form doc. You could even do a scripted show. I mean, there's a lot you could do. And I just think instead of interrupting the show they want to be watching, like create the thing that they want to spend time with and just think about it a little bit differently that way. So.
I love that. Create the thing they want to spend time with. Makes content feel like a little bit easier, and you're not reflecting back or looking at it when it's published and thinking like, oh, that feels inauthentic, or why did I do that? You've brought your brand purpose into brand action, created something that, if you know your customers, like you mentioned earlier, if you're spending time with them and understanding how they use their products, how your products benefit them, then you can create what they want to spend time with. I love that. I
Thank
love
you.
that. Well, so self-confidence, I want to talk about that because in order for you to have had these ideas and then bring them to fruition, there has to be a certain level of confidence in yourself and in your ideas and in your work product that can make all of this happen. So let's talk a little bit about that. Where do you get your confidence from? How do you keep it high? What are some of the tricks that you use to ensure that you show up and really elevate in the way that you want?
That is a really interesting question to stop and think like, what is that root cause of like being confident? Like, I mean, I can be self-aware enough to know that I am, but like, where does it come from? So like our daughter is 12, so we're in middle school, we're in it. And we were just having this conversation last night in the car about like how even as adults, we still care a lot about what other people think of us and how that isn't unique to middle schoolers, but that's something that we all continue to wrestle with, and how much of that is that kind of the root cause of the decisions we make, and if we feel like we're living in our purpose or not. I mean, I think it's a really complicated thing. And so I think I'd have to credit kind of a couple of things. I would credit my parents. I mean, I really think they just instilled this belief in me that I could accomplish things, and I was smart, and I was capable, and I was independent, and go for it. And I do thank my parents often for that, but it's a good reminder to text them when I get done with this. And I think that that's a great responsibility we have as parents. I mean, parenting is hard, I think, and it's your whole life, and every decision you make, it goes through that filter. And what greater responsibility do we have than to kind of create that assurance in kids that they're, that what they're going to do matters, that they're capable of things. And it's not just that they're capable of anything, like the everyone wins a trophy kind of mentality of our generation of parenting. It's a little more about having the assurance that you matter at your core, which is what I think being I was definitely raised in a very faith-based environment and continue to remain a very spiritual person. And in fact, have spirituality has become a really important part of my life, even though my practices or different rituals have evolved or kind of continued to expand. I think it just growing up feeling like you matter and you're on purpose, I don't even know how exactly you communicate that to a child specifically, but what greater gift could you give someone than just that core belief that you matter and you're here on purpose, that there's meaning to your life. So I didn't mean to go so deep. It should have been, I don't know what else. It should probably should have been like my friends tell me, Matt, I have great hair or
No,
something like that. I
no, I
don't know
love
what it is,
that.
but yeah.
And
Sorry.
I especially love thinking about the assurance that you matter to your core in reference to other people's opinions, because even as, you know, we're adults, and you and I take the stage and we talk in a very public space, like at some point I had to let go of like what people might be thinking about me and understand that my message, I believe in it and I know the impact that it can have, and that elevates my confidence, right? And I've seen it work, and if it doesn't work for everybody, like, you know, that's their choice to not accept or consider the message. It's really none of my business. So other people's opinions can kind of stay there, but also thinking about that through to your 12-year-old, right? And teaching her that she's here on purpose. She matters to her core, and instilling that fundamental can bolster her confidence to know that she matters no matter what other people say, think, or do around her. In a world that is a little tougher today than when we were growing up, when you have so much access to like just everything, what people are wearing, doing, feeling, saying, thinking, the way they're reacting. I think that's important, is that self-assurance is.
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, nobody tells you, like, they tell you a lot of things, usually unsolicited advice about being a parent. Yeah. But one of the things someone tells you is like, it's like your heart just like gets on a bus and leaves the house every day. And it's just out there in the world. Like she has School Musical auditions this afternoon. And I'm like, I don't get nervous to go on stages. You and I do it a lot. I know you don't either. And it's like, but I'm so nervous for her. Like, I'm just like nobody prepares you for like how you kind of feel these emotions outside of, you know, yourself in such an intense way. So
yeah, well, and the pride that you have for them. My boys, I have two boys and a girl, and my boys have started wrestling, and that sport, because it's so one-to-one, my brothers wrestled, so I've seen it for, you know, a long time. My dad wrestled, my uncle did. Seeing them like on the mat when they're one-to-one, I'm like ready to cry at their practice. It is embarrassing. And I told them, and I'm like, all right, when you guys have your first meet, I just want you to know that your mom's going to cry. Like, I just can't hold it in. Just seeing you out there and how much you've grown and like how you're learning this new skill. It is wild. Like the range of emotions that you go through as a parent. But it's also the best thing ever because you experience life at a totally different level. It's amazing.
Yeah. You know, I think it's really interesting is like, just speaking of a 12-year-old, like, and having that conversation with her last night, like it kind of also occurred to me that I was, maybe this is where the confidence comes from. Listen to this. It occurred to me that I was good at that conversation. And then it unraveled this whole thought for me around like, my goodness, like, of course parents are going to be good at different stages than others. Like we're going to love our child and our whole life revolves around our kids. Like all of that will be true no matter their age. But just like a teacher doesn't teach preschool through 12th grade, they specialize because they just get that their personality is going to like connect with kids at a different age group. I think the same thing is true as parents. Like I also have this like different lifestyle now and more time with her. That could be part of it as well. But I just think I'm better suited at this age than I was like when she was a toddler, for example. Like I didn't love the sound of my own voice. I didn't think I was good at being a toddler parent. I loved my child. I took great care of her. I have good memories, but I didn't necessarily feel super good at it. And I think that's going to be mine. Like now I'm going to have unsolicited advice for new moms, like to just like pre-warn them. Like there's going to be stages you just feel better at as a parent, like in terms of your, for lack of a kinder word, performance as a parent or how you're showing up for your kid. But I think that's an important thing to think through, like that there's just going to be stages you're better at. You're still a good mom, but you're going to feel more fulfilled, like in terms of how you're showing up for your child at different stages in different ways. But I don't know if you feel the same way, but
no, I totally agree. And it makes sense that now that your daughter is like coming into this age where you can greater connect on an emotional and like intellectual level when you're somebody who is leading, you know, people through these different thought processes of evolving the way they show up in the world. Like, of course, you're going to connect with your daughter at that level. And it's an amazing testament to your parenting too, that she's ready to receive those messages. So I love that.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. I hadn't thought of it that way. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. So I wasn't totally messing up in the early years.
No, no, not at all. Not at all. You, I don't know. This is a weird way to say it, but like you reap what you sow, right? You put it in, you put in all that work early. And now today she's like listening to her mama. Nothing better than that.
I love it. I love it.
So I want to go back to TV for a moment, because you had talked about like all of these small businesses across the United States that you worked with and problem solved. Two questions. One, what was maybe one of the bigger problems that you saw just happening over and over again with these small businesses that maybe you can help our audience through hiccups in their business, whether they have a small business or they're working for a huge corporation, like we're all encountering roadblocks. And the second, I do not want to forget to ask you about your most memorable TV moment.
Yeah. The most common thing that we see entrepreneurs, and I suffer from it too now as an entrepreneur, is that we don't think of our time as valuable of a resource as our dollars. You are uniquely suited to grow your business in a very specific way based on your skills and what you bring and why you started, for all sorts of reasons. Can you figure out all the other pieces? For sure. You could figure out how to file your taxes and how to update your website, whatever the task happens to be, you will figure it out. You're an entrepreneur. It's part of your DNA. But at what cost? Like, if it's going to take you longer and it means that hour is spent doing that instead of this other thing, like building customer relationships or actually hosting the content or whatever it happens, writing the thing, whatever it happens to be, developing the product. If you're not spending on the thing you do best and like about running your business too, it's just going to drain your time and your business won't grow as fast and you won't derive as much enjoyment from it. So that's the number one thing. There's a whole slew of other very common. Oh.
I'm literally seeing this book out of the corner of my eye, Who Not How, which okay. is all about hiring and offboarding the work that is not your specialty so that you can employ your special sauce to make the business or the company grow, which is relevant for entrepreneurs and those who are working inside big businesses, because especially I think as we are promoted to management or VP level status, we like hold on to all of the things that we did and like the hard work that it took to get us here. And you're like, well, I know how to do that. Or I can learn how to do that, when really, as you're elevating, your thought leadership is becoming the most valuable piece, like steering the ship in that direction. And entrepreneur or inside that corporation, you're probably also elevated because of your way to connect with customers or stakeholders and grow the business, because growing the business involves the revenue side and you need to be spending your time there, not on all of the, you know, minutia that you did earlier on. So I feel very justified hearing you say that. And how did you teach people or instruct them to like let go? Are you helping them with like, here's some of the systems you should use, or you should hire these people? Like how do you identify those hangups and kind of help them through to the other side?
Yeah, I'm even thinking about it in terms of my own business. Like, what am I doing? How am I making these exact same mistakes? What we always do is just kind of try and help identify, like, what do you really love about your business? That's probably the same thing as what you're good at too. Like, there's a basic human need, I think, to feel good at what we do. Like, I think that's kind of an old adage to think like of things as like, even service-based work or work, just that it was just that it was work, that it was hard, that we didn't want to do it. And I don't think as humans we're designed to be that way. It's a little bit like when people say, do something you love and you'll never work a day in your life. That's not true. That's not possible for everyone, but there is ways to feel good at what you do and get at that same kind of human emotion. So we would just spend time making sure we understood what the entrepreneurs truly were good at and liked doing about their business, and then recommend, you know, different systems for, you know, is there a freelance copywriter in your town that could help you update your website more often or help you with content? Or is there a local accountant or photographer? Like, oftentimes you're helping support another small business, another independently employed entrepreneur grow their work by doing that. So I just developed a new talk, and I could have figured out how to do. I come from the design world. I feel pretty proficient at PowerPoint and things like that. I could have figured it out, but I used to work with this amazing woman who started her own business designing presentations, and she's brilliant at it and good. And not just at the design of the slides, but the structure of it. It's all really great. And so it was a delight. And I actually held me accountable too, in a different way. Like, if I was just responsible for building this PowerPoint for my new talk, it would have been, you know, till 2 a.m. over and over, you know. And anyway, it moved the project along. I supported another female entrepreneur, and it's a better product than I could have come up with myself. So
I totally agree. One of my big hangups, we were talking about it briefly before we started the conversation, but the social media piece. And while you are great at creating content and, but thinking about it in a way like doing well by doing good, how does that empower your business? Like, it's a different, your superpower is a different mechanism than putting the post on social media. Mm-hmm. And so I had recently in my business hired somebody to help me with social media. And as you said, I'm now employing a small business, which feels really good. I'm working with other people, which, as someone who's mostly working alone, unless you're speaking in front of a huge audience, right? It feels good to have mm-hmm. partners to help you with what you're doing. And it took something that takes me, like, I could do it, but it takes me such a long time to put it together on my own. And anyway, I checked a lot of boxes, like doing this onboarding and hiring this one local company, another small business to help me with something where I needed help. So I totally get and support what you're saying there. But oftentimes it takes like the advice of somebody else to push you over the ledge to like get there.
Well, you in return just inspired me. Like, I know I need to do just that. Like, I have the instincts to know what should go on social. Yeah. I can kind of see the copy in my head, but like actually doing it, it just keeps falling down the list because there's other fires that are more urgent. And, you know, and part of it too, is when I was at Deluxe and we were doing the show, we had a whole team doing it. You know what I mean? So there are people coming in and asking for the copy. They were asking, make sure you take a photo when you give that speech. They were like, you know, there was kind of someone else I was accountable to. So, all right. You've inspired me to do it. I got to just, yeah. Yep. I got to take my own advice.
I was the same before. I'm like, oh, I used to have a whole team who could do that. And now I have it again. And then all it took was, I started talking about the problem. I started asking for recommendations and referrals. I got, a lot of people sent me all sorts of different agencies, individuals, people who were just starting out, people who were far along in their career. So, that's kind of my other piece of advice is like, maybe don't jump with the first referral. Make sure that the same way as you might have done when you were working for a larger corporation, like you didn't interview just one candidate, right? You got a big pool, you did your interviews, and then you selected what would be right for you at the right time. Like, you owe it to your business to do that same thing. And I wouldn't have landed on the right solution had I had not explored like so many different opportunities.
All right. Good advice. I love it.
Okay. Best story from the show.
Oh, okay. Just one. Oh, geez. okay. So I had, over the course of the 6 seasons, I had 3 different co-hosts. So season 1 and 2 was Robert Hirschevac from Shark Tank. Seasons 3, 4, and 5 was Ty Pennington from Extreme Home Makeover. This will make sense why I'm going into this. And then season 6 was Baron Davis, who is a former NBA All-Star turned, entrepreneur himself, which is fantastic. And they were all so great and brought something kind of different to the table. I think rather than one moment, Oh, I'm sorry. I should be coming up with one moment. Well, I'll say this, and then maybe I can come up with a moment in the back of my head while I'm just telling the story. Is my favorite thing to hear was that people would say to us, like, "Oh, you're who you are on TV. Like, you're not this, you know." Like, it was very reassuring to kind of hear that they were having a human experience with my team and I, and that it wasn't kind of this false Hollywood feel, that it wasn't genuine. And I think that was really fantastic. My favorite part is that every time at the beginning of every episode, we would always go in and like test the wares of the business, you know? So if it was a crepe shop, like Ty and I would attempt to make crepes. Oh, okay. All right. See, I knew it would come to me. Okay. So my favorite, one of the best moments of doing that is we worked with a golf course in season 5. And it was in Fredonia, New York, which, by the way, we filmed that season during 2020. So a lot of that show was actually filmed, you know, of course, from our basement. But at the beginning of that season, we were able to, that was before the bef that was in January of 2020. We made a bet that whoever would, you know, whoever had the longest drive, the other person would have to wear a kilt in the final scene of that particular episode. And I had the longest drive. And so Ty did make good on the bet and walked around in a kilt. And we have this great moment where he lifts up his leg for the camera and it's blurred. And it's like, which I was proud that we went all the way there to be kind of funny about the authenticity of how you wear a kilt. So
I
it's
love
just a
that.
lot of fun. It was just so much fun. And working with that team was really incredible. Everyone from certainly people who are in front of the camera, but the people who are behind the camera. We had an incredible crew. My team at Deluxe was unbelievable. I think that was the hardest part of the show kind of coming to an end, was just that we didn't get to work together with these amazing people every day. I mean, you hear that from people about TV shows, you know, the ones that we love. They say that's the hardest part, is that this family, I mean, you really do. You're on the road with these people, you're creating something with them, like we have a shared experience.
I don't know about you, but I love learning more about myself. If there's a quiz out there to help me better understand who I am, I'll take it. If there's a journal prompt, I'm using it. But how about a business that helps female leaders communicate effectively while inspiring confidence and trust in those you want to impact? Sign me up. Breakthrough Brands is unlocking clarity for women leading progress. They build leadership brands for women to discover what inspires them, define what drives them, and unlock how to share their brands with others. Do you want to gain clarity on your personal brand? Shoot me a note at leadershipisfemale@gmail.com or on Instagram, and we will introduce you to the women who will help you unlock your leadership brand. That's breakthroughbrands.com. Do you need a keynote speaker for your next conference, ERG meeting, event, or group? I'm here, raising my hand. I help leaders grow their confidence so that they can lead more intentional, goal-directed, fulfilled, and happy lives. We are conditioned from our childhood to stay small. Don't be conceited. Run in the middle of the pack, because if we speak out too much or shine too brightly, we will offend other people. This could not be more wrong. When you are your best, most confident leader, you give others permission to shine too. So, how do we get there? How do we increase our confidence? I love sharing my best practices and proven methods to help leaders grow into who they are meant to be, your most confident, authentic self, ready to take on your next biggest challenge in the office and in your personal life. Get in touch at emilyjansen.com. It's a new year, and I want to welcome a new sponsor to the Leadership is Female podcast, Staffy. That's STAFI, and they can be found at getstaffy.com. We are all busy professionals and we have a lot on our plate, and GetStaffy is here to help. They are a virtual assistant company. They're virtual assistants, legal assistants, receptionists, intake client specialists, sales representatives, and paralegals are thoroughly trained and effectively can manage multiple tasks, from answering customer inquiries to booking your family activities and managing your calendar and appointments. Plus, you get to save costs with our easy subscription-based service. That's getstaffy.com, or reach out to me at Emily Jansen on Instagram, and I will connect you directly to their people. They are a phenomenal company, and we've got an interview with their CEO on the podcast. If you need help, if your company needs help, if you need a virtual assistant that can help save costs and get more done, GetStaffy is the way to do it. GetStaffy.com and mention Leadership is Female, or let me know and I will put you in touch. Let's go.
Are there any businesses that you're still in touch with or talking to?
Yes, yeah. almost all of them, and some of them more than others. So for season six, so the first five seasons all took place in different small towns. And as I mentioned, we were filming season five in Fredonia, New York, when the pandemic hit. And that was the first season to be nominated for an Emmy. And I think it was because it was truly a journal entry into what small businesses went through that year. I mean, when I, like, just the other day, a clip came up, and there is this moment in the episode where the music changes and you hear like the broadcaster voices and you see the empty streets, and it gives you goosebumps talking about it. Like, it just sends you right back to how uncertain March of 2020 felt for all of us, especially small businesses. And so, you know, it was really wonderful to be able to truly continue to help them from afar and figure out a solution for that. And then creatively still make this TV show. But the other thing that happened during 2020, of course, was that George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis, which is where we're based. So in our hometown, in our backyard. And of course, the world went through this unbelievable kind of social awakening around the continued prevalence of racial injustice in our society. And so we decided, as everyone was trying to figure out how to be a part of the solution, we felt like, you know, one of the ways forward around racial injustice is economic empowerment and supporting Black-owned businesses. And our program knew how to do that and knew how to do it in a way that wasn't white saviorish and would truly be, you know, something that could be long and sustainably helpful. And so we brought it home for season five. And that's when we made the decision this would be a perfect final season. You know, the bringing it home, the social impact was an all-time high. The entire season was guided by a lot of community listening. But I'm probably still, like, I'm having coffee next week with one of the business owners. I helped Tamika from Lip Esteem with their Christmas orders. Like, because they're here in our backyard, it's a little bit easier to stay in more daily contact. But anyway, that was a long way around to say that, yes, still in contact with the businesses. We're still, talk a lot. The fact that so many of the businesses are still in business is a statistical anomaly for when you put it against national small business survival rates. So, and the ones that aren't in business anymore, it was, you know, of course, pandemic related. So anyway, yes, we still talk.
Well, I love your answer because it included so many additional stories and things for us to think about, and how great to like wrap it up in your own town. And I love Minneapolis. Minnesota is just, it's like something special. I'm from the Midwest, even though I'm living on the West Coast now, but it's just so, this word's so overused, but it's like, it's so authentic. Like it is, it has this, you know what to expect in a lot of cases, like, oh yeah, of course we have this or we have that. And I see this and the people are great. Like I couldn't love it anymore. So I'm so happy that you invested in your own town to wrap it all up. That's so cool. Well, we've talked about hurdles of small business owners, but I want to talk about what's maybe one of the hurdles that you've had to overcome in your career, and how did you do it, and how has it served you in the future?
Yeah. So I think the biggest hurdle I've had to overcome was the one I just overcame, or I'm still or in the process. I mean, like, So about a few years before I left Deluxe, before we declared this was the perfect final season, it became clear to me that while I loved the work and it was so incredible, nothing lasts forever. I wanted to start thinking about, what am I going to do once we wrap the show? Do I want to keep on this track of being, you know, I was definitely had invested a lot in my career around this kind of chief marketing officer track and everything I was doing from my career. But about halfway through, I was like, I don't think so. Like, I want to just do more of this beautiful brand storytelling, stuff that matters in the world. I wanted to do more film. And it kind of occurred to me that I could either go to another company and create a whole new program and do that for another decade, or could I somehow do it from the outside and help more than one company at the same time, and then also have more time for speaking and other career or other creative things that I was interested in. I want to write a book, all these different things. And so I started kind of dreaming up this portfolio career. And I always draw it, the first time I drew it like a sunshine coming up out of the horizon with these rays coming off of it. And I was like, book and speaking and more film. And so that sunshine still is an important symbolism to me. But I spent probably, that was probably about 5 years before I ended up leaving, before the show ended up wrapping and everything else. And so I suppose some people call it manifesting. I didn't realize that's what I was doing at the time, or like working toward it or spending time on it. Anyway, I was working toward this for a long time. But when it actually came time to leave and to start my own business and to kind of invest in this lifestyle I was building, it surprised me what a cliff that was. Like how much of my identity was wrapped up in, I didn't think I had ego around title or how sexy it is to go to a cocktail party and say you host a TV show. Like, I didn't think I had anything wrapped up in that. And it became very clear to me I did. And then it also was just kind of, it's just recalibration. You have a lot of muscle memory around working for someone else. For over 2 decades, I worked in organizations. And to suddenly kind of have this, again, this thing I was working towards and wanted, it felt very, you know, kind of, I think the first cocktail hour I went to and someone's like, what do you do? And I tried to explain the concept of a portfolio career and I kind of stumbled over it. And I just remember having like hot tears in the back of my eyes, like, and then feeling like, I don't know, what do I do? Nothing, everything. I had kind of this very identity thing. So I think the biggest hurdle I had was kind of this sense of identity and just really realizing that my purpose wasn't the small business revolution. My purpose wasn't that role or the accomplishments or the awards I had won or the things I had achieved in my career. My purpose and who I am is me. Like I'm my purpose. Like it's not so macro. It's me. And so it took a lot of kind of, this is what kind of kicked off my own spiritual journey and really being intentional about it. And it led me to this beautiful place where I have this new talk called The Purpose Pursuit. And it's all based on what I just learned these last 2 years around how much we put, you know, so much stock in working for other people or in a job or in a title or in how other people define us, and that our purpose is actually something much different. And so I share with the audience the things I've realized in doing all this research personally. You know, I've literally listened to all the podcasts and read all the books and conducted interviews, all because I'm also writing a book about it. But I had to start sharing it right away. I couldn't wait till the book is done. Like I just, so what I learned from that hurdle is that sometimes you have to go through it, not just to get to the other side and be pleasantly surprised by how much even better it is on the other side, but how purposeful that journey was for me. I wouldn't have had this new talk, which every time I give it, people come up and say really meaningful things to me about what a difference it made for them. And no pun intended, but it helps me feel like I'm living my purpose. And I wouldn't have had this perspective had I hadn't had such a hard time when I left and been so surprised by having a hard time when I left. And anyway, so it was, it was just an interesting process to go through. I thought of it so binary. Like if I would have a day where I was, not feeling as optimistic about building my own business. And I mean, you know, being a speaker is like, it's not as if you can just say, I'm going to do 20 engagements a year. Like it's very much reliant on other people booking you and things like that. And so I'd have days where I was like, what did I do? And feel like I made a bad decision. And then I'd have the next day where I'm feeling very optimistic and I'm getting calls about speaking and it's all going great. And I'd be like, I made a good decision. And I thought about it so binary, like either good or bad. And someone said to me along the way, like both can be true, same time. I was like, oh, and then that's what kind of started changing my mindset around it, that this is going to be kind of a journey to go through. So
What an impactful talk you created. And I'm so happy I asked this question because the story is true for me. It's going to be true for so many of our listeners. Like, nothing lasts forever. And when it ends, then what? I spent so much of my career going from one, climbing one rung of the ladder to the next. And when I left my role as GM, I spent, gosh, probably a year unraveling that identity and the ego associated with it. I did the same thing, fumbling over how to describe what I was doing next. Finally, for those that I didn't really have to tell them what I did, like, I was fine having them think that I just stay home with my kids. And I was like, you can think that, and I'm going to keep grinding, you know, I'm going to keep doing my work and making the impact that I feel, is so important and like what gets me up every day. But I totally resonate with that. And then in the journey and like taking the next right step every day is what, really is revealing, you know, your purpose and what you're supposed to be doing. So I'm sure that that is a talk people are anxious to book to resonate with those audiences. I love that. I love it.
Thank you. I do too.
Okay. Well, when you're not working this portfolio career, you mentioned volleyball coach and your daughter, you know, what are you doing? What does life look like for you in Minnesota?
Yeah. So, I, on the rays of the sunshine lately, I've been putting things like, I want to, really use my creativity and my skills in the community work that I do. Like, I served on boards and things like that when I was in the corporate world, and that worked well in terms of the kind of time I had. And now I'm like, I want to dig in there. So, I was able to be super involved in the Children's Theater Gala and like the creativity behind it. I'm helping the Special Olympics National Games are coming to Minnesota in 2026. So I've joined that team to help really figure out what that's going to look like. And are we going to do some cool content and film? So like kind of bringing my community passions with my creativity, that's an important, you know, slice of time I want to be spending. Yes, volleyball coach. I'm kind of plant obsessed. I started out because I needed to build out a home office now that I was going to start my own business. And so it started out with like kind of a botanical kind of mood board. And you can see the wallpaper behind me, but like it's, let's see if I can move my computer. But I've got like, yeah, now I'm up to like 22 plants. I mean, it's crazy. I love them. I love them so much. So I'm a plant person. I tried welding. And I love it. That was kind of fun. Yeah. I don't know. It's just like having like time to try things. I got into pickleball like everyone else in America. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know.
I need your green thumb because even my like spider plants are dying. Those aren't supposed to die. I don't know what's going on. I've been trying to change the soil. I'm like watering them less. I moved them around the house. I don't know what's going on, but they're dying. And maybe I need that app that like, have you seen
well,
that?
I found the ones that I have lost, the ones that are no longer with us. I have lost a couple over the last 2 years. I know it was because I overwatered them. Like, mm-hmm. It's just a little bit like, it's like humans were like, oh, if a little bit's good, much more must be better.
Yeah.
So I overwatered them. They, certain ones really do respond to light. And so that is the one thing I look up all the time. But that's also frustrating. You look it up and you're like, why is my jade blah, 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 and insert whatever problem it is. And it's like, it could be that you're overwatering them or underwatering them, or it might be too much light or not enough. And I'm like, this is not helpful at all. So yeah, it's kind of a mystery. But I also talk to my plants like a real weirdo. At least my daughter and husband think it's weird, but they all identify as female. They all have names. I don't always remember all the names. I remember them, ladies, don't worry. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just like, it's just fun to like be taking care of something else. I think that's why when people get older and retire, that's why gardening, it feels like there's meaning. Like, I'm keeping this thing alive. So
I have been talking to my plants saying, you are going to live.
You got this.
Come
got
back this. To life, please. Yeah. You're going to live. We're going to have a great time together. Do you want me to play some music in my office? Like, I am entering desperate mode because all of a sudden I care a lot and I want them to survive. So yeah.
You're going to feel that energy. They're going to pop right back. And then think about how great that'll feel.
I know.
Think back from the brink.
I know. I'm like CPR on these plants in my office. Okay. Let's do the final four questions. What is your best piece of advice for women today so that they can level up?
Protect your time and be serious about it. How long are these answers? Well, you know how long I can talk. So I'll keep it to one sentence. Like, protect your time.
Beautiful. Okay. Where are you traveling to next?
I'm going to Charlotte on Sunday for NABO, their annual conference, to share my purpose pursuit talk. So,
all right. What is your pump up song? You're getting ready to take the stage. What are you listening to?
I love the song. I have a whole playlist, but my favorite is Love Shack, because whenever it's on, no matter what, like my daughter, you can't not dance. And so, yeah.
And then finally, what is your favorite quote?
Well-behaved women seldom make history.
Beautiful. Amanda, this has been so fun hanging out with you today on the podcast and getting to know you better. I will absolutely take you up on those dinner recommendations next time I'm in Minnesota, or maybe any city since you travel so often. I'm sure you know all the spots. But where can we follow along with your career and even look to book you to come make an impact in our places?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. Instagram and LinkedIn are my favorites. And so I'm at Amanda K. Brinkman. The K is important. That's my Instagram handle or on LinkedIn. So Amanda K. Brinkman. And then for speaking, my website is amandakbrinkman.com.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for being here with
thank
us. So appreciate
me.
You. And you've definitely inspired us.
Oh, thank you. Likewise. I love spending time with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for spending your time with us today. Time is your most precious resource, and it means the world that you spent it with us. Please help us reach more people who need to hear these interviews by hitting the subscribe button and the 5-star rating on your iPhone. Do you know someone who could benefit from this interview? Please share it. Take a screenshot and post to your Instagram stories, copy the link and share on LinkedIn, or text that link to your colleague. The Leadership is Female podcast exists to showcase female leadership in sports and entertainment and give you the tips to level up. We will extend a hand back to lead you forward. Extend the same hand by sharing this with someone who needs to hear it. One last thing. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Leadership is Female. Now, take this lesson and run. Let's go.